Okay, we'll make a start. Good evening. My name is Claire Gladewright, Acting Mayor of Kingborough, and I'd like to welcome you all along to tonight's council meeting on Monday, the 1st of December 2025. Welcome to those also in the public gallery. Could you please make sure that your mobile phones are turned onto silent? It's 5:30 p.m. and I now officially declare the meeting open. Council now operates under Local Government Meeting Procedures Regulations 2025. Under these, I am required to advise you that an audio or audio-visual recording is being made of the meeting, and all persons attending the meeting are to be respectful and considerate towards other persons attending the meeting, and see language and conduct at the meeting that could be perceived as offensive, defamatory or threatening to a person attending the meeting or listening to the recording is not acceptable. The audio recording of council meetings is made publicly available on our website and meetings are live streamed on YouTube. I will now ask the staff to confirm that the audio recording has started. Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, the Muwinina people, and pay respect to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community, the Palawa Pākehā. Attendees this evening, we have myself, Acting Mayor Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Antoli, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Richardson and Councillor Street. From our staff this evening, we have the Chief Executive Officer, Mr Dave Stewart, Director of People and Finance, Mr David Spinks, the Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Mr Daniel Smee, the Director of Engineering Services, Mr Craig Mackey, Director, Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Delise Shikuti, the Manager, Environmental Services, Ms Liz Quinn, Climate Change Advisor, Mr Padraig Pearce, our Consultant Planner, Ms Kate Heckelman, Communications Lead, Ms Sam Adams, and our Executive Assistant, Mrs Amanda Morton. Apologies this evening are from Mayor Councillor Reet. We're on page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please, that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting number 20 held on the 17th of November 2025 be confirmed as a true record. Move Councillor Fox. Looking for a seconder, please. Councillor Cordova. All those in favour and against? Motion is carried. We're on page two now. Workshops held since the last council meeting. There were no workshops. Declarations of interest. Does any councillor have an interest they would like to declare? Councillor Dean.
Thanks, 12.1 and 12.2, but I'll be staying in the room. Thank you.
Any other declarations of interest? No. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public wish to ask a question without notice? Thank you. If you could please just state your name and your suburb.
Good afternoon. Tamika Adkins from Oyster Cove. So given the community's interest in timely housing delivery and transparent planning practices, I have some questions around DA timeframes and RFIs. So Kimberley Council has not been the primary cause of Tasmania's housing delays, but its rezoning choices, SAPs, restrictive overlays and shift towards lower density zoning have nonetheless added to complexity and uncertainty in the community. How does the council justify these planning decisions in the context of a statewide housing shortage when other councils are zoning up to increase the supply?
Mr Stewart.
thanks for the question, and we there might be the opportunity for the Director of Environment, Development and Community Services to add to my answer. I guess It's a wicked problem that we've got around housing in the state. We know there are significant shortfalls of housing around the place. In fact, as one of the priorities within the Greater Hobart Partnership, working with the other councils that we have within the Greater Hobart region, we are looking at how we manage and advocate for acceleration and greater density housing to be able to achieve greater housing supply and appropriate urban design that maximises that. I guess the question comes to not everywhere is going to be the place for greater levels of density, and looking at how we balance housing across our municipal area and making sure that the appropriate development is done in the right place as well is a really critical element. So that's probably answered the question at a more strategic level, but Ms. Shikuti might have an addition around the sort of planning process.
No? Yes? Through you, Mayor. So in terms of the application of zones in the draft LPS, our officers have been following the guidance and guidelines issued by the State Planning Office and the Commission, as well as STRALIS, the Southern Land Use Strategy, which we have been working very closely with the State Government on having input into that, and as our CEO said, about where densification is appropriate in our municipality, and then planning for, I suppose, the correct zones to be applied in those areas identified.
Further questions?
Kingborough Council consistently issue RFIs, often pushing applications into lengthy discretionary process. While RFIs are a legitimate planning tool, their frequency in Kingborough has raised concerns. Is this just another tactic employed by Council because it simply does not have the resources to deal with its statutory planning requirements?
Ms. Shikuti, through you, Acting Mayor. No, I don't believe so. While I don't undertake statutory assessments myself, I do review a lot, and I also review when we receive feedback or complaints in relation to particular applications. What I generally find is that when a request for information is sent, it is because information submitted is incomplete and therefore has to have a reissuing of the RFI to request that information. Often some items are not provided at all in responses, which can reflect at times the time it takes for an applicant to gather that information, particularly if technical reports, etc., are required. So it's quite complex and it varies by application. In saying that, it is an area we would like to focus on and we'll be looking at to see if we can be more efficient and ensure that we're not unnecessarily delaying the process.
I know that often the RFIs have been issued purely on planner's opinion and it has been escalated to yourself and the CEO for turnover to the client's favourite too. So I understand what you're saying. In the interest, I do have a further question. So in the interest of transparency and accountability around approvals, to better understand the impacts of RFIs on development timelines and to ensure sound governance and evidence-based decision-making in the planning process, can the Council provide statistics on the number of RFIs issued over the past 3 years, including the average time added to application process as a result, and what portion of permitted applications were moved to discretionary so that the community can assess whether this practice is generally necessary for compliance or whether it functions as an administrative delay that slows housing delivery?
Ms. Shikuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. I will have to take that on notice. Reason being is that would be an incredibly complex task to do, so I'd have to go and review what would be involved to provide an answer.
Does anybody else have a question?
My name's Jason Andrew Smith. I'm a Palawan man living in the Huon Valley. Just excuse me because I'm a little bit nervous. This is the first time I've had to attend one of these meetings, and I'd rather not be here, to be honest. But there's a few things that have been brought to my attention. My first question is, when are we, as a council, going to start prioritising cultural burning? and focusing on land management around Indigenous knowledge to do with fire. I look around the room at this table and I've engaged in conversation with a couple of people here over 3 or 4 years ago. Once again, the same as when we do that acknowledgement of country, and no disrespect when I say this, I think there's a lot of box ticking going on and there's not a lot of follow-up action. So the question is, when is Indigenous knowledge, Petrula Nairi, Fire Good, what I run, I've been doing this for 5 years around the valley now. I've run hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of workshops. Thousands of people have attended and now going home and putting the right fires back on their country. When are we going to get that support from council?
Mr. Stewart.
Again, I might have the first crack at that and then pass across to one of my colleagues. So, firstly, I acknowledge the material benefit that comes with appropriate cultural or coal burning on land. You know, everything that I have been told in my time in Tasmania has been that it is the best way that we can be looking after both our land and also looking after our bushfire risk, so I acknowledge that. I also acknowledge that the time is now, or, you know, it was in the past, but the time, if it's not in the past, then the time is now that we should be moving towards that more appropriate land management practice, both on council land, but also supporting it to happen on non-council land as well. So I acknowledge your point, but one of my colleagues might like to add in specifically where we are in this process.
I can add to that with some more detail around what we have achieved and what we are wanting to do. So you might be familiar that Council has an ongoing partnership with SeaTac, and we have a trainee land management officer relationship with SeaTac, and that's been absolutely fantastic to build our relationship with that particular organisation. There's, of course, other things we do with a range of First Nations organisations in Tasmania, but SeaTac is the one that we do have that partnership with, which is we're also looking at land management partnerships with those with SeaTac as well. So one thing that, in terms of cultural burning, we're in the middle of negotiating a contract with SeaTac to carry out cultural burning for us. But you're probably aware that council owns 3% of the land, a really small amount of land in this municipality. So we do absolutely want to move to cultural burning and have attended lots of training and understanding of that practice. But more importantly, I think the point would be to make much more impact would be to encourage others to be able to access cultural burning for their property. So we could do that through advocacy as well as what we do on our own land.
Oh, and I certainly appreciate that. But I'd also love to say, where did that groundswell for that to happen with SeaTac? It come from me in the workshops that I ran, not only for SeaTac, but for the Kingborough Council. And I had a few people inside this council that looked me in the eye, that hugged me on a couple of those days and said they were going to support me and support Petrula Nairi. Why does it always have to be an Aboriginal organisation? Why can't it be an individual? I'm the one that's been out there for the fire. I laid the ground, you know. I was the one that created this. I was the one that brought the fire down to the valley 5 years ago and engaged with respectful landholders and whatever the other word, stakeholders that we use. But yet there's been no support for me. And it's as if, because I'm focused on non-Aboriginal or landholders, I've been left out of the conversation. And
there was a question in there.
Well, I don't know.
So would you like Ms. Quinn to answer that question
on? I'm curious to know why it's been organisations and why no one's reached out. You know, we had a burn 3 years ago planned for Hawthorne Reserve up here on the top of the hill. 3 hours before that burn was supposed to go ahead, I get a phone call to say that because of insurance purposes, we've had to pull the pin. No one's followed up with me in conversation to include me in that conversation since. Okay. And I find that a little bit disrespectful.
Thank you. I have heard your question in there, so we'll ask for the answer to be given.
Clarify what the question is then. Was your question, why have you not been communicated with, engaged with? Is that like, yeah?
Yep,
great. I just want to make sure I'm going to answer your question. So I don't have a direct answer, Jason, as to as to why that was and what happened to the Hawthorne Reserve burn. The reason that we, and I guess it's not appropriate in this forum to talk about our procurement, given that we're in negotiation at the moment, so I'm really happy to have a conversation with you outside of a council meeting. But I guess what I would say is that council seeks to work with a range of Palawa people and organisations and absolutely does not want to offend or disengage. That is not our intent. It will never be our intent. Our intent is to work across a range of organisations, and our intent is to absolutely respect the knowledge of the Palawa people of Tasmania in cultural burning, because our objective is to have healthy land and healthy country, and using and sharing Palawa knowledge is absolutely critical in that. And so happy to continue the conversation with you about procurement matters, as is appropriate outside of here. But I guess what I was saying around SeaTac is that we have an ongoing relationship with them through our trainees. So I'm sorry if you feel that we haven't engaged with you, but I'm absolutely happy to pick that up again and meet with you to discuss that.
Thank you.
I'll try and be brief on the next one. So it's been brought to my attention. I don't understand all the jargon and all this land zoning and all these fancy names and that we're throwing around. But once again, we talk about closing the gap, and we talk about treaty and truth-telling and engaging in First Nations people and bringing them to the table. But yet all these groups and all these landholders are being dictated to that they can't do this on their land, they can't cut this down or can't cut this down, from people that have had a Western interpretation on reading country. Okay, and when I get sent these emails with all this detailed stuff that the council's put out to them and the reasons behind it, that's not what country's saying. So once again, the question there is, why isn't Indigenous people like myself, who's a local, who's been busting my guts for the last 5 or 6 years in the community to do the right thing, being included in the conversation when it comes to decision making? I should be sitting at this table.
Okay, thank you for the question. Who would like to have a go at that one? Ms. Shakuti.
Through you, Acting Mayor. That's a really good question that you raise. As the planning authority and the local government, and I understand that the language around the planning scheme and the introduction is technical and clinical, can feel clinical. Our position is that we are in is that we need to operate under the Act that applies to us in terms of introducing a new scheme. So that process is set out and that is what we follow. So drafting the scheme or the local provisions and then putting it on exhibition. So the exhibition was the point in the process where our whole community, landowners and community in general, could have a say and make a submission in relation to the proposed zoning. And then further to that, those who did make those submissions are then invited to talk with the Tasmanian Planning Commission, which at the hearings which are underway at the moment. So while there, I suppose, wasn't a specific outreach to different communities, there was a general public consultation. But I acknowledge your point.
Because I would have thought one of the first protocols would to send an invitation out to people like myself to see what our voice is. And my biggest concern at the moment is you're making decisions for countries. I've got 2,500 generations of my family were decision makers on this country.
Mr. Andrew Smith, I do just have to remind you this is question time.
Yep, okay, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Thank you, Jason. Charlie Biggins, Leslie Vale, I have some questions following on from Jason and following on from Professor Michael Rowan's questions on notice and your council officer's reply regarding cool burning and mechanical vegetation management planning scheme exemptions. There was a question from Michael Rowan, and an answer from Nikki Denexter in tonight's agenda. So these questions are addressing that. Why is cultural burning given exemption under the prescribed burning clause of the Biodiversity Code overlay, but mechanical management of the same vegetation prior to conducting a cool burn is not interpreted as being part of the same prescribed burning exemption?
Ms. Shikuti, through you, Acting Mayor, I'll have to take that on notice.
Why didn't the council officer also extend to Professor Rowan's question the provisions contained within the same Biodiversity Code exemptions for the clearing of previously cleared land by mechanical means?
Through you, Mayor, Acting Mayor, sorry. I'm unsure as to why Ms. Denexter did not extend her answer, but I'll have to take that on notice.
We are seeing time and time again a deliberate application of professional bias in the implementation of the planning scheme. Why are our planning staff cherry-picking their way through discretionary interpretations of the Biodiversity Code exemptions to deliver an unworkable solution for landholders?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I don't accept that our planning staff are cherry-picking.
I just gave you an example of exactly that.
And I will have to go away and look at how that is being applied to determine if the rationale and validity of that question. However, what I will say is our planning staff are professional experts in their field and apply the scheme and its various rules as intended. Thank you.
My questions. Thank you very much.
Are there any further questions?
Karen Groves, Snug. I just need a breath. Sorry. In the media, at meetings and after postponing TPC hearings, you've said you've listened to the community and their concerns around the proposed compulsory placement of their private properties in the landscape conservation zone. Your recent community update on the 25th of November stated that rather than an independent planning consultant, you had first appointed Jim Mulcahy, a well-known conservationist and advocate for the preservation of potential habitat. Don't you agree that this is a slap in the face to those families and shows you have neither listened to us nor stopped espousing environmental preservation values over those of land users against all directions of the TPC?
Mr. Stewart.
Thanks for the question. I think we might be getting a couple of things overlapped here. So in that update that we sent out, we mentioned that we were in the process of appointing two different consultancies, one to oversee the process to reevaluate the allocation of the potential use of landscape conservation zone through the municipal area. The second part of it was to look at the specific area plans associated with Bruny Island and the Bonnet Hill areas. So those pieces of work are being contracted at the moment, and we should be able to announce the specific contractors that will do those two independent pieces of work in the next day or so. The other, consultant that you're referring to was in response to conversations we've had with the Planning Commission around expert opinion relating to things that relate to environmental issues. In conversations I've had with the Planning Commission, they suggested very strongly that we needed expert advice in that process. As part of the process that we went through with the notice of motion from council that ultimately got passed to appoint independent consultants. It did talk about withdrawing staff from the process. So in order to do that, we had been filling that sort of expert input from within internally. And so we've withdrawn staff from that and got someone in the meantime to talk about those sort of issues. I think it's important to note that we don't conflate that independent advice that we need in the meantime with the ongoing review of the LCZ. They are quite a separate process, and this is a process to get us through the hearings in the intervening times. This individual that has been appointed had come to us well recommended by a number of people who have been through this process with the Planning Commission and from the Commission themselves as an independent expert that could be highly credible, in this environment.
So do you feel like that was quite a long answer? Thank you, Mr. Stewart.
No, it's fine.
Did you...
The community update was confusing because it said consultants, where the motion that was moved earlier this year was around one consultant. That's the confusion from my side of things, so I make that note. I still think I can follow in with my second question. So as an environmental expert, Jim Mulcahy is known for promoting the precautionary principle, which suggests we conserve flora that is not only confirmed habitat, but also hypothetically or potentially habitat. So while forcing landowners to keep every plant and tree just in case a rare bird might want to roost in it one day, two of my three very real stepchildren have flown away from Tasmania due to a lack of education, work and affordable housing. Considering that in 2021 the total terrestrial reserved area in Tasmania was already over 50%, why does this council compel us to conserve more potential habitat rather than supporting us to house and keep our families together in Tasmania when we have ample room to do so?
Mr. Stewart.
I'll just address the tail end of your previous question first. So the reason that there's two consultants rather than a singular consultant, it was a matter of timing. To move through this process as quickly as possible, council has chosen to appoint two consultants to separate the work so that they can occur in parallel to stop dragging out this process as fast as possible while still getting a really quality result. To address the substantive part of your second question, the rationale for having a consultant that addresses the environmental issues relating to land is one of providing expert opinion within the hearings process. It's a component that we are requested to provide by the TPC, and it's not to attempt in any way to reserve land or anything of the sort. This is a statutory process that we're moving through, and it's about exposing as quality information as possibly can through the process. So I can understand that having family members move away from home and seek employment and housing and all those sort of things in other areas is a real social challenge that we have in our communities, and we need to be doing more to be providing quality and affordable housing, quality employment in our communities. They are all really important things, but they can't all be dealt with in singular, isolated conversations around specific issues like land use, zoning and planning. It is part of the equation, but it's not all of the equation. So this is where council needs to work with other layers of government, other agencies, to make sure that we're addressing these wicked social challenges and making sure that we're providing a really livable community, a livable environment for our communities to live in.
Planning Scheme Clause 3.4.2 states that environmental overlays should be applied in accordance with contemporary scientific assessments, ensuring restrictions are only placed where significant confirmed environmental values exist. The Struelis, page 55, says that planning decisions that impact land use should balance conservation with community needs, avoiding restrictions based solely on hypothetical or potential environmental values. Your advisor's appointment does suggest that the council will be speaking in direct contradiction to these guidelines. Don't you agree that this will potentially lead to further TPC directives, costing ratepayers more time and money?
Ms. Shikuti.
through you, Acting Mayor. These matters are to be put to the Commission for discussion and robust discussion of the technical information put forward. So it is probably not something we can or should be kind of trying to answer in a council meeting. And I don't want to preempt Mr. Mulcahy will be putting forward as his technical opinion in the hearings either. What I will say is that both council and the commission will be obviously referring to the guidelines and Stralis in which you have just referenced in terms of decision making around how different overlays should or should not be applied.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions?
Jamie King, Blackmans Bay. Would council or does council think with consultants, directions from the TPC, the amount of people that turn up all the time to council meetings, that you guys have handled this process appropriately?
Mr. Stewart. Yeah, thanks for the comment. Look, I think we've acknowledged multiple times that with the ability of retrospect and looking back, there's a number of things that we might have done differently through the process. Fully acknowledge that, and we will take these as learnings and a must-do better situation for the council. We're here to serve our community. That is why we exist. That's not always doing exactly what our community asks, because there's always different perspectives that come from our community, but we are here to serve you, and so therefore we need to make sure we're doing things as efficiently, as effectively as possible. And obviously when we're doing rework, obviously when things are taking as long as this process is taking, it means that it's not as efficient as it could be. So I acknowledge your point, and I think we have said in the past that we've acknowledged that we could have done better than this process.
Further questions? No. Okay, we're on page 2, questions on notice from the public. So just a reminder, if you wish to submit a question on notice, you can do so by completing the relevant form on Council's website or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. We had 4 questions on notice from the public. The first one was consultation regarding the Bonnet Hill specific area plan from Mr. Brendan Charles and an officer's response from Adrienne Stander. The second question related to code of conduct complaint against former Mayor Dean Winter from Mr. Charlie Biggins and an officer's response from Dave Stewart. The third question was regarding cultural cool burns from Professor Michael Rowan, and there was an officer's response from Nikki Denexter. The last question was regarding LCZ applications from Mr. Professor Michael Rowan and an officer's response from Delise Shakuti. We're on page 4, questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Antoli and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. My question is regarding the 4 units that we own on Bruny Island that we classify as, I suppose, affordable housing. A couple of residents have contacted me to say that the lawns around those units are, in their opinion, excessively high. And I'm wondering if we could get a comment from an officer as to looking into that or an opinion on that.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. I'll get one of my staff to go and have a look at the lawns, and if they need attending to, we'll get it done.
Thank you. That's
all for me. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. It's a busy time of year where, as a councillor, we attend lots of different community events, and I did over the weekend and to the art launch on Friday at Gordon. And often when I'm at these events, I have community members telling me great things they enjoy about council activities and who can they send an email to. So I often direct them to that KC@Kingborough email. But I'm just wondering, when we're out and about at community events, if we can have sort of maybe some QR code feedback thing that they could perhaps scan and provide some feedback directly that way. So, but yeah, we had some really great feedback about the walks that we do and the art events and the activities, and claiming they're, you know, so much better than other councils and how friendly they are and how friendly the staff are. So I thought it'd be great to pass that on to staff as well.
Yeah, thank you. We can look into how we can capture that feedback more effectively and make sure it's more accessible. And it's always great to get positive feedback as well. Our teams do some amazing work out there.
Does any other councillor wish to ask a question? Nope. We're on page 4, questions on notice from councillors. We had one question regarding feral cat management from Councillor Cordover, and there was an officer's response from Reen Reichart. So the open session now adjourns and the planning authority commences at 6:05 p.m. We're on page 6, officers' reports to the planning authority. Agenda item 12.1, PSA-2025-1, proposed amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, site-specific qualification, additional discretionary uses at 124 Channel Highway, Taroona. There is a recommendation on page 25, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Move Councillor Cordover, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. So this is a site-specific qualification. The proposal relates to basically a change in the planning rules for 124 Channel Highway, Taroona, and these would be extra discretionary uses, meaning that council, after looking at them again, will then have the opportunity to look at the details and look at the public comments and make a decision then. So this isn't a recommendation for a particular building or design, but it is a recommendation for a new rule to allow this particular site to function in the context of a medical facility. So basically the site itself was formerly used as a church, as many people know, for over 70 years. It contains an existing building, driveway and car parking. This is the beginning of a planning scheme amendment process, so this is just the first stage before we go to public exhibition. The public exhibition will take place over the course of 28 days if this proposal is successfully moved tonight, and that public consultation will include over the course of the minimum period of 28 days, the proposal is to publish it on the Kingborough Council website, twice in a newspaper circulating in the area, a site notice during the public exhibition period, and in writing to the owners and occupiers for the property and adjoining properties, as well as a full package of exhibition material displayed at the customer service area of the Civic Centre in Kingston. So we don't yet have the opportunity. This is basically the first step in the process. After this takes place, then it will go to public consultation and people will be able to take a look at what the proposal is, which relates to the changing of use from that site, which is currently a vacant building, no longer being used as a church, although it was for 70 years, a potential change of use of the site towards a medical facility. Thanks very much. I commend the motion.
Further contributions? Councillor Antoli.
Yes, I just have some questions for the relevant council officer. So obviously the request was a little bit more broad in terms of the zoning request than we had allowed. I'm just sort of wondering, when I look at what is not allowed, I'm just trying to understand what is so... and I believe the reasoning why we restricted it was that we wanted it to be more in harmony with the local residents and their needs. But when I look at the list of things that were disallowed, none of them, apart from maybe a cinema or a small theatre, is probably a bridge too far. Could I get a comment on why the added restrictions, why the need?
Eckelman.
I guess in terms of the need, or I guess the intention to reduce the types of uses that are allowed in terms of the overall breadth of things that are considered in that use class, there's, I guess, two elements. One, it's to ensure that the uses that do take place on that site are in line with the residential, I guess, intention of that site, and I guess of the broader area, and can kind of act in harmony with those. And the uses that are provided for are those that are kind of directly aligned with the proposed, or the uses that will be provided for in the low density residential zone under the new planning scheme. So there's a direct correlation there, and I guess an intention that when that scheme comes into effect, those are the types of uses and the categories of those uses that would be allowable within that zone at a discretionary level.
If I may ask a few more. Is that working? Yeah. If I may ask a few more questions. So are cafes, restaurants, coffee shops, takeaway shops, bakeries, any those disallowed?
Under the current scheme, those are prohibited in the zone. Moving forward, those would be under the amendment allowed as a discretionary use.
Have they been allowed under this agreement?
Yes, just not with a drive-through, which is equivalent to now. So you can still have those uses as a discretionary use, just not where it's got a drive-through facility associated with it.
Could you give me a bit of a off the top of your head list of the sort of things that have been requested that aren't allowed?
So I guess it's kind of narrowing the threshold of the uses. So the use classes that we've put forward in the recommendation are those that I guess align with the uses that are provided for under the new planning scheme. But I guess in terms of a business use, at the moment what is recommended is to tie to the same limitations of it just being for a local shop, I guess, which is something that's considered in terms of the drafting of the planning schemes and the construct of those zones, a use that is kind of acceptable in that residential setting. So it's, I guess, tying to a level of and a capacity of uses that are kind of within a framework that is already, I guess, in play.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you. And would a chemist be allowed under the usage currently?
Under the current zoning in the planning scheme?
Yeah, under your recommendation or the council's recommendation.
Not unless it was to be categorised as a local shop.
The sound is not actually activating very fast. What I'm trying to understand is, would in the original request a chemist be allowed?
As a general business use, potentially. However, I guess that part of the rationale for limiting the uses to what is, I guess, aligned with the uses in the low-density residential zone under the new scheme is to avoid any issues or points of contention with the nearby activity centre. So to, I guess there is, I think, I understand there's still work to be undertaken in the future in terms of that Taruna local centre and what that looks like in the future. But part of, I guess, the regional plan and what that tells us to look at is to ensure that activity centres and, I guess, business uses are kind of looked at in an area that might be kind of an activity centre and are consolidated where they can be, to avoid kind of having centres travelling along and, I guess, providing for uses that are outside of the centre.
I certainly don't want any of my questioning to sound combative. I'm trying to explore what can be provided to maximise use to the local community. I don't live in the community, but I know it relatively well. Let's propose a medical centre or a doctor's surgery wants to set up, but they also want to co-locate a chemist on site, which is often a fantastic setup. Can this be done under the council's recommendations? And if it can't be done, what can you recommend we do to allow it to happen so that they work in sympathy with each other and I would assume really benefit the local community?
Depending on the scale of the chemist or the facility that was provided for, I believe that there would potentially be capacity under the existing or under the medical centre facility for it to be considered an ancillary use. However, I guess that's something that would be dependent on the application that was made. And I guess part of the application that was made for the consideration of this planning scheme amendment also had a medical centre, I guess, component with it. So I guess that is obviously the intention of this site at this stage, but recognise that the chemist may fall outside of specifically as a standalone use what is currently proposed.
So definitely not thinking of it as a standalone use, and it's not my job to come up with a business plan for the applicant. I'm just trying to be a responsible part of the council to say it's often sought after. There aren't chemists in the area that I'm aware of. And it's oft, and we can't get enough doctor surgeries in Tasmania. The more the better in some respect, as long as they can manage their business. So I'm wondering, I'd rather be able to see an opportunity for this business to really benefit the community by co-locating on site if it's their wish, giving them the freedom to maybe even go down this road, a chemist shop or a small chemist facility along with a potential doctor's surgery. Would that be possible under the recommendation we have before us? That's what I'm not clear on that.
I believe that if a chemist was to be categorised as a general retail and higher use, then that would not be provided for unless it was a local shop, which I don't think that a chemist would necessarily fall within.
Councillor Antoli.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
I have to say your name.
Yes, no, I got you. And I'm not narcissistic enough to want you to say my name, but I'll wait for it in nonetheless. I'd like to propose that we amend this so that a chemist or similar service can be offered in conjunction. And I'm wondering if I could get some advice on how that might be done.
Yeah, I think it would be good that we get some advice on that, because my understanding is we can only discuss what is actually being assessed here, and so you're trying to bring in something that hasn't even been proposed. So let's get some advice. Ms. Heckelman.
In terms of, I guess, the recommendation put to council, there are, I guess, the narrowing of the uses in terms of the use classes was a recommendation to council. So I'm not sure in terms of the process for council, but I guess there is, in terms of what was proposed initially, a general retail hire and use completely was provided for in the initial application. So I would assume that maybe leaves it open to council to be able to determine an alteration to the recommendation of council, but I'm not sure in terms of council processes how that works for the meeting.
And given we're in the planning authority as well, how does that work?
Does make it kind of a use that wouldn't normally be contemplated, I guess, in the residential zone under the new scheme that's to take effect. So it would be the only thing that would remain as a difference in the zoning under the new scheme. So I guess what had been put forward in this recommendation was that the uses that are going to be provided for under the SSQ are those which exist under the new planning scheme. So when that takes effect, assuming that it comes into effect first, that the SSQ would fall away and council wouldn't have to do any additional work to be able to continue on that planning scheme amendment, because it would fall entirely into line with what's expected and anticipated within that zone under the current scheme.
Could we get some advice, please?
Yeah, through you, Acting Mayor. So I think we've got a couple of options at this stage. We could potentially defer this decision in order to get further advice. However, I'd need to seek some comment from my colleagues about how that relates to statutory timeframes and being able to turn this around. The other option we'd have is to adjourn the meeting temporarily so that we could have a conversation about how we could potentially acknowledge Councillor Antoli's desire to change the recommendation on a way forward here. So there's a couple of options there if Councillor Antoli would like to proceed with an amendment to the recommended course of action.
So firstly, let's just find out the statutory timeframes. Is there enough time if we deferred this tonight to bring it back in a fortnight? Should it be a fortnight?
Through you, Acting Mayor, I actually don't know the answer right now. I think the best way forward would be to adjourn, to come back with some advice. It would also depend on... We'd also have to be consulting with the applicant as well in relation to this.
OK. How do we... Do we need to, a mover and a seconder for an adjournment? Sure.
Please. I don't want to see it slowed down. So we have a business here that wants... We have a potential business here that would like to see a zoning change so that some material benefit can result to the community. And I don't want to slow down. So basically, as I'm hearing it, there's not enough current information to know in the room whether or not we can make an alteration or amendment to this recommendation here and now or vote towards it. We would have to adjourn either for 2 weeks or for a few moments to discuss. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
I think I'd rather go for just a few moments, not weeks. I'm happy with that, but I don't know what the process is for that to happen. Do we have to vote on that? How does it work?
For an adjournment. So move Councillor Cordova, seconded Councillor Fox. All those in favour?
Aye.
And against? So the adjournment has been granted. 5-10 minutes? Okay.